Welcome to Parents' Perspective. I want to read the book about the jungle animals, declared 4-year-old Jason, slipping his pajama top over his head. Okay, his dad replied, grabbing the book from his son's bookshelf and settling himself companionably against the pillow. Hop up now and we'll read it together. Jason snuggled up against his dad. Let's read about the different kinds of monkeys, he flipped the pages. We talked about them today in school. I like the picture you made, his dad responded. Why do you like monkeys? Monkeys have strong legs, he slid down off the bed, and they can jump, like this. Jason squatted down on the floor and sprang into the air. Wow, exclaimed his dad. That's really good jumping. Did you do that in school? Jason nodded. Do you know they can hold on to things with their fingers and toes? His dad responded. You know a lot of things. Jason grinned. I know a lot about monkeys. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about arts education for children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has done years of work on the arts in early childhood education. Miriam C. Flaherty Willis has been involved in arts and education program development and management since 1973 and has directed the Wolf Trap Foundation for the Performing Arts Education Program since 1990. The Wolf Trap Institute for Early Learning Through the Arts is the main education program of the foundation, based at the nation's only national park dedicated to the performing arts outside Washington, D.C. The Institute involves professional performing artists in working with children 3 to 5 years old, as well as their teachers and their parents. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Mimi.
Thanks so much, Linda. Good to be here.
Picasso famously said that children are natural artists. If that is the case, why give youngsters a structured program of arts education?
Picasso, the full quote actually tells a bit more of the story.
Good.
The full quote continues that, yes, children are born natural artists, but the problem is how to remain an artist when he grows up. If that's the problem and the challenge, I think our role as adults in lives of children are to make sure that they have very rich, full experiences learning in the arts and about the arts. I love your opening story because it started by little boy saying, let's read a book to dad. And dad saying, come on, settle in next to me and we'll read the book together. And they did indeed read the book together. They were engaged in literacy. They were engaged in communication back and forth. Dad was asking the best questions because they were open-ended. You know, what do you know about monkeys? What do you like about monkeys? And if you pay attention to how that child was interacting with dad and the book and the content area, he was demonstrating prior knowledge, but he wasn't sitting and filling out a test and coloring in a bubble. He was up and moving around the room. He was actively engaged in not just learning, but you could test him on that. That was an assessment right there. That child knew what he learned in school, and it was a smart dad. Some great prompts coming out of a book, but most importantly, it was that interaction between adult and child, and that's learning through the arts.
Can you describe the program that you direct? It has to do with the performing arts, right?
Yes. The Wolf Trap Institute for Early Learning Through the Arts has been going on in this nation's capital, but also all across the country and internationally for close to 30 years, and it started with a question. And the question was, what would happen if we put a performing artist not to perform, but in a classroom with early childhood teachers and children? Could that artist help young children learn? And could that artist help teachers teach? I believe the brilliance of our artists in those early days has continued and has continued to inform our work almost 30 years later. They were smart enough to realize when they walked into those early childhood classrooms that looking at a group of 3-year-olds or 4s or 5s, they couldn't use all their performer strategies. This was not your typical audience. And more than that, they weren't supposed to perform. they were supposed to teach. So what did they do? They turned to the person who knew those children the most, or the best at that point, at least around them, and it was the classroom teacher and the aide. And these wonderful early childhood educators took our wonderful teaching artists, and that's what they're called, by the hand and said, no, you don't do it that way. This is what's appropriate for three-year-olds. This is how a four-year-old learns. This is what a five-year-old loves to do. So we literally learned about children at the hands of early childhood educators, and it's a partnership. So they learned about how the arts can inform their teaching strategies, how they can continue using the arts as how they teach and how children learn long after our teaching artist has left the classroom. And the program has changed in many ways, but that's the heart and soul of it, and that continues today.
How much time does a teaching artist spend in a classroom?
One of our residencies will last 16 sessions, and it occurs over 8 weeks. And we really try to reinforce what it means to have a good partnership. It's not just us coming in and doing something in the classroom. We talk to the teacher, what are your goals for this period of time? It's about 2 months. What are the curricular areas you're looking at? What are the needs in your classroom? Do you have a bunch of very active little boys and you need to channel that energy? Or do you have some very talkative children who love to be verbally involved in whatever program is going on? And then the artist and the teacher side by side create strategies that meet those goals. So the artist might be in the classroom for about half hour to 45 minutes each time. Again, that's developmentally appropriate for children of that age. And then they work with the teacher so that the teacher can continue the strategies in between the sessions and certainly leading to the point where the teacher can take over. Teachers are great artists. So let the teacher take some of these strategies, incorporate them into her own lifestyle, her own teaching, and continue after the Wolf Trap teaching artist has left the classroom.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on fostering arts education.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Mimi Flaherty Willis about fostering arts education.
What kinds of connections have been found between early arts education and other skills that are developing in children?
I think, again, you go back to what's important for young children first. You start with the child. So where are children learning? What are the important, not just skills, but domains? What's being developed in children? Children learn in stages. So we're not going to start with a three-year-old whose motor development doesn't allow them to skip, for example. Developmentally, they're simply not there yet. So you need to start with where the children are, and then you start making the connections. And it's not just the arts in service of the learning, but it's children learning appropriate skills in the art form. I can give you one example. Children have these lovely little voices. Their vocal cords are very short. So they are simply not able to sustain the deep voices that we adults probably sing. So when children sing, and we want children to sing with us, we sing up in our head voice, our baby bear voice. Then the children will participate. So there are areas we need to know as adults to be really informed about how children learn. It's their physical development. It's their cognitive abilities. It's certainly their emotional and social development. And then we do start getting into emergent literacy. They're not necessarily reading, but the language, the literacy is emerging. And how do the arts make those connections?
Are there some kinds of arts that you find children generally respond to more readily than others? I'm thinking, for example, that all children I know like to sing. Whether they can really sing a song or not, they like to make singing noises. Many of them like to move around to the music. Whether it's really dancing doesn't matter. But sometimes it's very intimidating to ask a child to draw a picture because many children think it has to be right. It can't just be a picture in their own minds.
I think we're going back to our friend Picasso. All children are born artists. And why do they think it has to be right or wrong? It's because somebody told them, no, the sun is not blue. Mm-hmm. The sun is red or yellow or orange. So then they right away learn it's right or wrong. Why did you color that sun blue? I've never seen a blue sun. Tell me about it. And there might be a very good reason why that sun had to be blue. As far as different children responding differently to different art forms, we all respond differently to whatever the stimulus might be. I think children do love to sing. I think children do love to be sung to. Mm-hmm. Children respond to a steady beat. It's the heartbeat of the mother that they first hear, probably, they first experience. It could be a song, but it could also be a very gentle movement. When we put babies to sleep, how do we do it? We rock, we sing, we talk quietly. There are elements of the art form within that. Then there are those children who certainly love to move. They cannot sit still. And as adults, again, it's our challenge to find out productive ways for the children to move. Maybe we can channel all that energy. One of my teaching artists was teaching a class, and it was full of a bunch of very active preschoolers. And the classroom teacher wanted her to do Where the Wild Things Are, which is certainly a classic. And children love that book, and adults love that book. We respond to it on many levels. And Bobby Lucas is a dancer, and so she was quite ready to dive into this book until she started thinking about wild things, dancing, rumpus. Oh, dear. This could really get out of control with this group. And she created a wild thing rumpus by first allowing the children to put on their imaginary wild thing ears. She kept breaking it down.
Oh,
nose, fingers, fingernails. Let me see your fingers. And we're going to do the wild thing dance, but we're going to dance with just our hands. We had a great big old rumpus, and the children were those mean, scary, wild things, but all of the control was in their hands, and they loved it. They absolutely loved it. So it's giving children a chance to be successful also in the art form.
Have you seen or heard of any sort of overflow of what's been going on as the children then move into elementary school? Have you seen teachers or principals say, boy, the kids who were in that kind of program, this is the result, what we're seeing?
A good arts and education program, especially one being conducted by an organization like Wolf Trap, because we're not within a school system or a Head Start program. We're coming in as an outside resource, a community resource. So it's very important that we connect to what's going on in that school, in that classroom, and what the expectations are. And we need to be informed by exactly the kind of research, studies that guide early childhood classroom development, curriculum, because it leads to expectations in elementary school and beyond. There are some studies, and important studies, that are frequently cited looking at what makes a preschool experience that is successful for a child later in life, later in education, setting children up to be ready to learn. So it's not so much the content, it's the habits of mind, the ability to attend. You ask what a kindergarten teacher wants. It's for children to be there, ready to learn, capable of taking in knowledge and using it. So that's the job of the early childhood teacher. And then what does the first grade teacher expect? And so on. One study was conducted by the High Scope Foundation. It's based in Ypsilanti, Michigan. And your listeners may have heard of this study because it is frequently cited. It's one of the few longitudinal studies. By this, I mean a study that began when children were very young and has followed them throughout their education and now into secondary and post-secondary education. You can imagine, number one, it's very difficult to track individual children. It's very expensive. You have to get all kinds of permissions from the families. It's not something a school would lightly engage in, or researchers for that matter. But what they looked at was the type of preschool education that the children were engaged in. They were looking at children having the opportunity to make choices, to be engaged in very active learning experiences, so not necessarily sitting at a table or a desk. They're preschoolers. They don't do that well. Making choices that they can then act upon and see results from. The children who were engaged in this study came from an environment that might be considered to be at risk or not as privileged as some other environments. So these were children who might have had a more challenging time going into school. Consistently throughout the study, the years that we've followed these children, they have been more successful at school than their peers who did not participate in this type of preschool program. They've been more successful in not just grades, but their attitudes towards school and learning, fewer instances of involvement with family courts. As they're now into high school, fewer children are dropping out. More are looking to some type of post-secondary learning. Might not be college, it could be trade school. And the only difference is these now young adults' experiences in preschool. So where do the arts fit in? The arts were not part of that study. But if you look at the qualities of the arts, they are the same qualities that are inherent in that type of educational experience, especially quality arts education for young children. It's open-ended experiences. It's based in communication, quality interactions between a child and an adult. Children can make choices. They can color that blue sun. They can make a monkey dance in a certain way. They can explore that monkey's legs. They can do a wild things dance with their fingers. And nobody has said, you must do it this way. It wasn't a closed question with one answer. So when the arts can parallel quality learning experiences, that's when you can start drawing the parallels between arts education, the impact of arts learning on future indicators.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on fostering arts education.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Miriam Flaherty Willis about fostering arts education. So, Mimi, what does all this mean for the future?
Quality learning in the arts, and I keep saying quality, because we can have bad arts education. We all have those scary stories where whether it was an arts teacher, heaven forbid, or an artist or another adult said, no, you're wrong. Do it this way. We have all of those horror stories. But quality arts education provides experiences for learners of all ages, and I'm even going to say adults, to be engaged in the type of learning and repeated learning experiences that reinforce what we should be moving towards as we not just look for today, but for the future. What are those, we call them now 21st century learning skills, that businesses want their employees to come prepared to commit to when they're in the workplace? What are the qualities, those 21st century learning skills, that we want our citizens and our residents of this country and the world to have experience in if they're going to be good citizens of the country, of the community, of the world? And it's things like team building, the ability to have a common goal and work together towards that goal. Does this sound like a school performance, whether it's the band or a dance recital? They want people to be able to think independently and take initiative. I'm going back to your story. That little boy was taking initiative, certainly as he was exploring how monkeys move and the strength. Gee, that's a science connection right there. Mm-hmm. We're looking at cooperation. We're not looking at content areas necessarily, because that knowledge is going to change. What we learned in school, what our kids are learning in school right now, the workplace, the environment will re-educate us. We need those interpersonal skills if we are really going to learn to function within a workplace or an advanced education or being good informed citizens.
America is unique in fostering a home for really creative thinkers, and it would seem that the arts would be an integral part of that basis.
When you look at who we celebrate in this country and in the world, they are the people who do think outside of the box. They've learned what they need to learn. They're very committed to the science, the math, the arts, but they take it one more step. And I agree with you that a scientist, a doctor, a researcher, and an artist are the people who enable us to look at a problem, solve it perhaps in a way that we've never considered before. It's not a multiple choice question. Mm-hmm. It's the other. And we need to give our children experience in those learning environments. And that's not necessarily something, unfortunately, that we can learn any other way than just lots and lots of practice and experience. And we need to allow young people to make mistakes and do it again. And again, isn't this what the arts are about? How many times have you seen a rehearsal where the conductor stops? No, let's go back. Mm-hmm. I had a wonderful experience yesterday. I was working with three jazz musicians who work with us at Wolf Trap. And we are creating a new piece, and we're creating it together. And nobody has the one right answer. Mm-hmm. And it's a challenge. And we're creating a jazz piece for children 3, 4, and 5 years old to give them some experience and some knowledge about music, but also about this great American art form, jazz. And the number of times where, boy, did it sound fabulous. These are incredible musicians. They stopped and went back and said, let's do it again. Good enough is not good enough. Mm-hmm. We can make it better. We can make it communicate more. And I know the children who have an opportunity to see the Wolf Trap Jazz Trio perform and many other performances across this country are getting those kinds of experiences. It's not just the product. It's a process.
Let's hear it for the squeaky violins.
Absolutely.
And the clay and the piles of wires and broken machinery and all the things that children should be able to mess with.
That's right.
When they're young.
I heard a great study recently in looking at our country's STEM initiative, STEM priorities, science, technology, engineering, and math. Big priority areas across business, United States Department of Education. We're all looking at how do we help our children become the scientists, the technology experts, the engineers, the mathematicians of the future. And you go back to how children start to learn. There was a concern about why aren't there more women engineers? Many girls outperform boys in elementary math and science, and something happens in that education that turns them away from those subject areas. But an early childhood study said it may connect to how girls have an opportunity to tinker. Mm-hmm. What do we give girls the opportunity to do? Boys might get the Legos and other toys that you can put together. Girls aren't being given the opportunity to put things together. A friend of mine who is a scientist, an engineer, and a woman, said she was thinking about that. And she said, you know, I think I got my interest in math and engineering because I sat with my grandmother and she taught me to sew. And what is sewing but putting pieces together, seeing the parts become a whole? Geometry, precision. Sewing is an art form. It's a textile art. And now that little girl is an engineer.
Unfortunately, we have to bring our conversation to a close. This could go on for many hours, of course. But before we do, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to learn more about some of the issues we've been discussing?
I'd like to point your listeners to one website, and I think it's a portal for not just arts education, but a lot of education issues, because it will help point them to some of the organizations, the professional associations, the businesses that are really looking at this issue. The website is through the Arts Education Partnership, and the site is www.AEP, Arts Education Partnership, -arts, A-R-T-S, .org. You can see resources, you can see publications, and one wonderful resource is you can simply click on About Us and see a list of the organizations that are members of the partnership. This is not a professional association. We're partners. We're all coming to a table talking about some of these types of issues. And then you can click on any of these organizations that looks interesting to you. I'd like to emphasize that doing the arts with children doesn't have to be about buying expensive tickets or products or technology or instruments. It sometimes is as simple as sitting down with a child and an adult and reading and letting your imagination go wild.
This has been such an enriching conversation for all of us. So, Mimi Flaherty Willis, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for asking all of these important questions.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573. With your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 423 and tell us if you can what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Joseph and Anna Smith Foundation. Our sound engineer is Elizabeth Buckle. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.